Darkcast Network. Welcome to the dark side of podcasting.
Listening to Castles and Cryptids, where the castles are haunted and the cryptids are cryptic as fuck. AF. And I'm your host, Alana.
I'm Kelsey.
And we're back, baby. Last week's episode, I guess, at this point. a little Patreon sneaky peeky. And something that apparently was supposed to be part of a regular episode originally anyway, as I forgot.
I guess so. It's been so long. Who can remember?
I know. I did have to, like, I was looking at the description on Patreon. I was like, oh, this one. And, oh, it was supposed to be, and we recorded it with this. But then, like, I probably talked too long and had to put it behind the Patreon paywall.
Yeah.
but, yeah, that's a fun one because aliens and sexy times and. I hope you guys enjoyed it, and now we're back with a regular episode, regularly scheduled programming, and even better, I have my co-host back.
I just realized I forgot to even post our last episodes to Facebook, but I did manage to get them onto YouTube on Friday maybe. Today's Saturday. I did it on Friday.
It's okay. And it's old people on Facebook anyway is what I'm learning.
Yeah. And on YouTube, I posted them both the last yesterday, which would be Friday.
Ooh, nice.
For everybody else, the 26th of January.
Yes, some do like to listen and then, on YouTube, so.
Yeah, I went back and edited, or updated, I should say, the little thumbnail picture for the one episode, yeah. And it put our episodes out of order, so sorry for the confusion, I guess, but
I don't know if it, like, shows on Spotify and stuff, but it did on our hosting, on our end, and it was like,
oh, yeah, it showed up on Spotify in the different order, and I was like, that's fun.
Interesting. Yeah. It, you're like, this one's been out for a week, and it has this many plays, but it looks like it's been up for like 2 hours. Yeah,
that was confusing. I didn't want to play around with it too much more, so I just left it out of order. But it's episode numbered. You guys will figure it out.
Yeah, it's because of the way Spotify for podcasters is, I think. But anyway, it's probably only bothering us, so everybody's probably like, whatever, guys. Shut up. No. But no, we're excited to, like, be back. And we haven't recorded in, like, over a week, my thing said.
Yeah, almost 2 weeks. Almost 2 weeks.
Odd. Yes, what is happening?
Yeah, we were getting up so early. I think we got up at, like, 5:30 in the morning every day, because that's when the rest of my family gets up, and I'm a light sleeper if I don't have my fan on like I normally do when we're in holidays. So as soon as they were up and out of their room and doing stuff in the kitchen, it woke me up immediately. So I was getting up by about 5:30 in the morning every day.
Oh, okay. And then, even when you had, like, Airbnb type of situation? So you had your own room, or...?
Yeah, this was like a 3-bedroom house kind of deal.
Yeah, nice.
Yeah, it was really nice.
But yeah, still, yeah, exactly. If your family gets up early, then you're going to hear them running around.
Doing stuff, so. Yeah, I was up early.
And
Pat
does
were...
dishes early. I'm like, what are you doing? Dishes before 9 o'clock for?
And then we were up pretty late most of the days, going to bed between like 10 and 11. I think one day I was up until like 1 a.m.
So,
yeah, we were just all over the place.
That's my bedtime.
Yeah, my bedtime is normally, well, let's just say yesterday I fell asleep on the couch at 8 p.m. So I was typing my notes and I fell asleep and was like, I think I need to finish this tomorrow morning because I'm too tired to try and like analyze what I'm reading or anything anymore. So, yeah.
I ended up sleeping the fuck in yesterday, actually.
Nice.
Yeah, it was. Not going to work. I'm not feeling it. And then I was like so tired, right? And
yeah.
I was just like, I'm going to go to sleep. And before, because if you're feeling sick at all, and then like for me, it's hard to get to sleep. So I was just like, if I can go back to sleep, that's what I'm going to do. And then I just like didn't wake up for a few hours after. I was like, holy shit. I really needed that, apparently. Yeah. Nothing. I didn't even do anything this week. It's just been a long ass week. And, you know, work and whatnot and whatever. I'm just glad the days are going to be getting longer now because that really gets depressing when you don't see sun all freaking day at work.
I was happy we came back to fairly nice weather because in LA it was between 15 to like 18 every day. It wasn't that crazy warm. But when we came back here and we landed, we left because, you know, landing and then onboarding the plane and getting your luggage, it takes like an hour to get out of the airport sometimes. So, I think by like 1 a.m. on technically it'd be Friday. Yeah, Friday. it was like only -5 here, which was really nice.
Yes. It was plus something today.
It was really nice weather. It wasn't like 2.5 weeks ago. Well, it'll be 3 as of this recording where it was like -40. So.
Yeah, we did the whole cliche Canadian thing where a polar vortex hit us. It was.
not our fault. I hated it.
No. I always hate it, even though it does have a tendency to happen like once a freaking year here in this goddamn city. But anyway, people are on Reddit like, why do people always complain? And I'm like to myself, because we didn't fucking grow up here, so we're not used to this bullshit. Or even if you did, it's just
I grew up here and I'm not used to this bullshit.
It's just too fucking cold. Nobody wants to go out and do shit. And like,
yeah,
people that work certain jobs can't work at those temperatures. Like, hello.
Yeah, when you're trying to breathe and the air hurts your lungs, it's not fun.
Cars don't start, things are just frozen over. It's did you ever figure out what to wear to the airport? Like, that wasn't a super heavy jacket.
Like, my mom had the idea just to wear our winter jackets with like our layers that we were gonna wear more on the trip, wear our winter jacket over them and then leave our winter jacket in the vehicle and then just have like the few minutes while we waited for the shuttle and we're in the shuttle colder. When we got back, it wasn't too bad. We had those layers again, and then we had our slightly cold winter jackets in the vehicle waiting for us, which didn't take long to warm up again. So it worked out okay.
Yeah. You wouldn't want to be packing those around for sure.
No, it was take up like my entire suitcase.
All right. Well, we had technical difficulties, so we probably could talk for a long time, but probably should just dive into our stories.
Yeah.
Sorry, guys, if you like the banter.
Then join our Patreon. We're less edited and more tangenty over there.
True. And speaking of less edited, I did not re-listen to that Akon the Alien. So I hope I didn't say anything too fucking untoward.
I do not remember. It was well over a year ago. Right? Out of sight, out of mind.
Hopefully, nobody made any, like, controversial comments. We try not to. Be like, I have this stance on this fucking thing. Because then, people come after you, bro.
Yeah.
All right.
Well, we have some... I guess technically this was supposed to be my birthday episode, but the Akon the Alien episode ended up being released on my birthday. So
hell yeah. I kind of like that in a way. It's a sexy episode.
Yeah. This is
in
my
honor of you.
My belated birthday episode that I picked the topic of, which is like old timey vintage true crime cases.
True. Yeah. Happy belated birthday, by the way.
Yes,
we'll say it now.
Thank you.
Even though Capricorn season will be over, but happy birthday to you and all Capricorn listeners.
Oh, I had a good birthday at Universal Studios. It was nice.
That is awesome.
Yeah.
I mean, you can't really ask for better than that.
Except yeah, it was
pretty
cool.
Flaming Moe's or whatever.
Yeah. It was like orange pop with dry ice in the bottom.
Oh,
and then
I
think some like soda water or something in it to make it more carbonated.
Yeah. I remember seeing stuff that like hot dogs that looked like they came right out of the Quickie Mart from The Simpsons when we were in like The Simpsons Land or whatever it's called at Universal.
I'm just
like, oh, those look gross. Like,
I think I saw those on the menu, but I didn't see anybody walking around eating them.
Yeah.
I did get a big pink donut and I ate the whole thing. So.
You can't really screw up donuts too badly. So that was a good choice.
They were really fresh and really nice. So yeah.
Yeah, because I remember we had a meal somewhere Simpson-y and it was questionable at best.
Oh, okay. Yeah, this week kind of just stuck to the Flaming Moe's. My brother had a Duff beer.
Ooh, that's fun.
Yeah, and then the donuts. But yeah.
Nice.
So for this, I at first, by the time I got back from my holidays, I couldn't even remember how I had stumbled upon this case. And then I remembered it was on a listicle kind of thing I was looking up about like older cases.
Okay. Love a good listicle.
Yeah. And this one kind of caught my attention for a couple reasons, which I'll like reveal as we get through to them. But
no spoilers here.
Yeah, no spoilers. It's the case of Joseph Vache. And he was born November 16th, 1869. A long fucking time ago.
Oh, damn. 69, nice. November 16th, nice. Scorpio, day before my brother's birthday. All right.
Nice.
Joseph.
What's
he like?
Not good.
I just have no idea what's happening, so I'm just gonna wonder aloud. All right.
He was the son of an illiterate farmer. I don't know if that's both his parents.
Seems like the times.
They also had a buttload of children. He was the 15th child.
Holy cats.
Yeah, like holy shit. 15.
Well, Catholics, I've heard of. They?
Yes, they actually were. My next sentence literally says, when he was young, he was sent to a very strict Catholic school.
It's funny, as I just got done reading a book about it was called The House of Kennedy. There was just so many Kennedys. Some of them had so many kids, like the Irish Catholic household tradition, like Bobby or whatever has like 11 kids, and I'm like trying to read it. I'm just trying to keep track when they get to all like the grandkids, because there's so many like Patrick's and Joe Juniors and Bobby's and stuff. Yeah. It was good though.
Yeah. So at this Catholic school, he was taught to obey and fear God.
Pray and obey, or whatever that show is called.
He joined the army in 1892 to escape his poor family, according to some sources.
Okay.
Others said he might have been like conscripted into the army, but most things said it was probably a way to escape.
Yeah, just instead of becoming a farmer, like keeping in the family business, maybe he wanted to branch out.
It said quickly he became pretty frustrated for lack of recognition or any sort of promotions that he was really getting. He thought they were coming too slow, or he didn't really get them at all. And he believed he wasn't being shown the attention that he felt like he deserved.
So, okay.
Yeah. Very, like, egotistical and arrogant, I think.
Right? Are we sure he wasn't born, like, 100 years later? Because he seems quite entitled for this day and age.
Right? From the 15th son of a poor illiterate farmer.
Acting like a trust fund kid.
Yeah. So during this time, Bache made his first suicide attempt. It was, like, quite bad. It said he slit his own throat with, like, a razor. But he ends up surviving.
Wow.
Yeah.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
Pretty insane. Like, who does that, though?
Yeah, right? While still in the army, it said that he had fallen in love with this young maidservant named Louise Barrent. And she didn't feel the same way about him and rejected his advances, saying she wasn't attracted to him. Which, well, I mean, fair. If you don't like the person, you don't like them.
He's not painting a great picture so far.
No. It gets worse, because after his suicide attempt, he was discharged from the army. And after his being discharged, he once again tried to, like, meet up with Louise. Something said that she had even, like, said he was stalking her for, like, months and all this stuff. Yeah, it was pretty crazy. And he even went as far as to propose to her. Some sources said that she ended up mocking him and his proposal, which left him enraged. And so he decided to go basically crazy. He shot Louise 4 times, and including, what? Like, in the head, and then tried to commit suicide for the second time by shooting himself in the head twice.
Twice?
Yeah.
He's really bad at this.
Mm-hmm.
But however, I bet he kills her, like, no problem, right? Because, of course.
No. However, ooh, both he and Louise would survive their injuries despite being, like, critically injured.
Holy shit, and multiple gunshot wounds to each of them.
Yeah, one thing said she got shot, like, in the mouth or something. So maybe it exited, ooh, like, her cheek. Yeah.
He must have grazed himself or something the first time, because how do you even shoot yourself in the head a second time if you've done a good job the first?
Like, I have no idea, but one of the bullets is pretty bad. Bache had shot himself twice in the head. He ended up paralyzing one side of his face that caused a severe deformity and left him with his right eye almost always being infected.
You know what that reminds me of, though, is that the one that I covered with Ryan Wall or whatever, because he was shot twice in the eye and the officers were looking at him like, oh, he was, yeah, the perp. Yeah, yeah. And they were like, what happened to you, buddy? Like, you killed your girlfriend. He's like, no, I think someone hit me in the eye with something. Like,
yeah, that was so crazy. Gross. It's still, like, that case haunts me
still. It's pretty fucking, yeah, terrifying to think about that, like,
yeah.
Yeah, you're not going to get the medical care you need, or, and worse yet, you're looked at as a suspect. Yeah.
Yeah. One of the bullets he had fired at his head remained lodged in his ear for the rest of his life.
Oh, my
and
God.
He also suffered brain damage, which ended up causing his pre-existing mental illness. They didn't specify, like, what this illness was, like, to get a lot worse. So
and
they believe
the
there
hell
was
is
quite
this bullet in his ear. I'm so sorry. Now I'm
I don't know, right? I thought about that for
canal
a while too.
Ugh.
I have no idea. Yeah, I don't know.
Somewhere far enough that you couldn't get it out.
Yeah, they said it wasn't safe to do surgery to get it out, so they left it in.
Ooh.
So, yeah, like with this stuff, his ear, his eye, getting infected. He has paralyzed on one side of his face. His neck has, like, a big slash from trying to slice his throat. Obviously, this crazy appearance, a lot of people, like, shunned him, and the reactions from strangers he says drove him to hate society at large, just like he people had. Aww. They were afraid of him, basically.
Okay. Yeah. I mean, yeah, I can see both sides there, I think.
Yeah. He was known otherwise for his, like, unique appearance with these facial scars, as well as what was described as his trademark plain white handmade rabbit fur hat that he always wore. There's pictures of him in the hat. There's a few pictures on the drive you can look at. There's, we'll put them up on the website.
Okay, because now I'm picturing, like, is it like a Davy Crockett hat?
Yeah.
Wait, is that the one with the raccoon tail?
Let me look at it again. I think it is. That's a pretty oh, accurate.
Rabbit fur. Very soft, beautiful.
Yeah, it looks very like, it's just kind of a top, like Russian. It almost looks Russian to me.
I'll have to take a sorry. Nothing's open. But I love a good Russian fur hat.
Yeah, this one's white, though, not black.
Oh, hang on. There we go. Old-timey crimes. Oh, very furry, yes. Very much. Yeah.
Fur. Just the straightforward little hat.
Yeah. Like, stands up a little bit. Not like yeah. a flat cap, yeah.
Yeah. So... after this second suicide attempt, it put him at, ended up putting him in a mental institution in Dole, Jura, where he made multiple successful escapes. There's lots of like details with it. Some of them he escaped like a train, and then other ones it was vehicle transportation, and other things he escaped, crawled through windows and bathrooms, and. All this shit.
Little Ted Bundy over here.
Yeah, however, he was always really recaught, sorry. It said that he was really violent with the staff and doctors during his treatment. But after 1 year, he was pronounced by doctors as completely cured, and he was released back into the public.
Wow. Okay.
Yeah. After so many escapes. Good job there. So many escapes. It's insane.
Oh, he's completely rehabilitated.
Yeah. I thought I had put it in there. Oh, no, that's at a different part. Never mind. Yeah, it didn't take long for the just 25-year-old Vache to begin his crime spree. I didn't go into a lot of details just because there's quite a bit, but between 1894 and 1897, he ended up killing 11 people.
Oh my.
Yeah. Many were adolescent young farm workers who were tending to flocks in very isolated fields, so he would like target them. Yeah, because nobody else would really be around them.
That is smart. And also, I just had a really weird deja vu. Considering how many times we talked about crime in this room, I suppose it's not that weird, but it still felt like.
Oh,
yeah.
We have neither familiar. One of us has covered this one, but you might have heard this case on a different podcast. It's pretty popular.
Oh, okay. I could see that too. That could be a thing. I've listened to a lot and forgotten a lot.
Yeah, I do too. So out of his 11 victims, they include one woman, five teenage girls, and five teenage boys.
Oh, damn.
Yeah, all were stabbed repeatedly. That seemed to be kind of his MO. Often disemboweled. Most of them were raped or sodomized. And
holy shit.
Almost all of them were very heavily mutilated, like their bodies and everything.
I mean, what didn't he do? Like, he's hitting all the serial killer boxes. You know how like some of them will kill, but they won't rape? You know what I mean? They're like, oh my god, I would never.
I couldn't find anything about cannibalism, but he did engage in multiple acts of necrophilia. So he also checks out that.
One of the two.
Yeah.
Yeah. You're pretty much the most depraved, but.
Two of the worst, right? Cannibalism and necrophilia.
Yeah. Like, okay, but maybe you didn't eat anybody at least. All right.
Yeah. It didn't seem like it, I guess.
Oh, boy.
So, yeah, that's basically what he did. He was known to be a drifter. He was traveling from town to town, mainly in the southeast of France. And he mainly survived by begging or working on farms. So that's how he kind of probably ended up near his victims, as he was working on probably the same farms as them or farms nearby. And it seemed fairly opportunistic. Gordo would like to make comment on... Would you like to cover the rest? Yeah. Would you like to read the rest of my notes, buddy boy?
Actually, I have a correction.
Buddy, you know I can't pet you right now. I'm sorry.
You full on just about, like, I was about to watch him walk across your laptop. That's what he looked like he was going to do.
Yeah. Yeah, so he's begging, working on farms. Most accounts say he was unkept. And pretty frightening to run across. He was known to carry multiple weapons, like a rifle, or not a rifle, sorry. I kept wanting to put rifle. A file? Like, I think it means a metal file.
Oh.
Yeah. Okay. Like, they always see, what, like, people are trying to escape prison with this giant metal file.
Right.
That's what I
exactly. It's got to be big enough that it's not, like, it wouldn't file your nails. It would file, like, a horse's hooves or something. I don't
something
know what they're
like
actually
that.
For, but yeah.
But I guess he carried that around. He also carried a pistol, a knife, a razor, and two large clubs. One of the sources said that he at first was going around with two pets. He had a dog and a bird, but the same source said he ended up killing them. And stuff.
A dog and a bird? Okay.
Yeah. He, like, beat the dog to death with one of the clubs or something in front of one of the families that had just, like, let him stay for supper because he was begging for money. And then he just, like, beat his dog to death in front of them. And then they're all just like, okay.
No, thank you.
Yeah. He's awful.
Sorry. Yeah. It made me think of watching Reacher. He's the hero or whatever. And he saw this dog that wasn't being treated well, and every time he went by he'd be like, oh, the dog needs its water or its food. And then, like, the third time he saw the guy beating the dog, and he was like, this isn't your dog anymore, and he, like, took the dog or whatever.
It's
very like John Wick. It's like, don't you fuck the dogs, man. Anyway, sorry.
What was kind of interesting is all of the victims were killed in different provinces. So even though he was poor, it seems like he moved around a lot. And even though some of the killings were as close as like a week apart, they were in totally different provinces in France. So.
Oh, that's where we are. Okay.
Yeah.
Like, wait, provinces.
Yeah, we're in France.
Canada.
Yeah.
Okay.
So breakdown of his victims. So 18, 9 to 4.
Fair.
There was Eugenie Delhomme, age 21. She was killed. Yeah, she seems to be the first one. She was a little different. I think she was kind of just stabbed, but then it seems like people are like, yeah, he got like kind of obsessed with just killing people after that.
That was the starter.
Yeah. The next was Louise Marcel, age 13.
Oh.
Yeah.
It's a very young teenager. Oh my god.
Yeah, the ages are all over the place. I think she's the youngest, though. Yeah.
Wow.
Then the next year, there was Augustine Marteau, who was 17. And then next was Maraud. She was 65. She's like the oldest.
Oh.
Yeah.
Bit of an outlier.
Yeah. There was Victor Portelier. He was 16. And then I think fairly soon after him was Pierre Massot Pellet. He was age 13.
Oh my god. Mm-hmm. So he just went for the vulnerable, I'm sure. Like, because if they were very young, or I guess at that time considered not very old, but quite old in the 60s, like, then easier to pick off for sure.
Yeah.
Okay.
Then in 1896, there was Lorut. She was 19. Then okay. Rosina Rodier, age 14. Oh, and man. The last victim, well, not, I guess not last, the last, like, killed victim was 1897, Laurent, age 14. So there's, like, details you can find. It's very...
No.
Yeah.
It's the perfect thing.
There's, like, details you can find online for each of the victims. Ones, I didn't want to go through all of them because it's quite a bit.
That's what's tough when they have victims. A lot of victims. Yeah. That's why I had to cut out the rest about Robert Durst's victims.
Yeah, right?
We're going to have to revisit that on Patreon. Yeah.
After that last one in 1897, well, in South Central France, Rocher tried to assault a woman who was gathering, some things said gathering wood, other things said gathering pine cones. So I think you just use pine cones as like fire starter though.
Okay. Yeah.
She was gathering them in a field.
Definitely probably not for crafts at that point
in time. No. little hand turkeys for Thanksgiving. Oh, I don't know.
Yeah, you make bird feeder stuff with peanut butter and
So she was out in the fields and she ended up fighting back, and her screaming caught like two of her family members' attention.
Oh, wow.
Most of the sources said it was her husband and son who came to her rescue.
Okay.
And together they ended up overpowering him, and they ended up like kind of detaining him and took him to the police. So they did a good job. Because I didn't go through all the victims, they had been investigating like each of these murders, but they weren't necessarily tying them all together. But they had figured out like somebody was targeting like people that were working in fields and stuff. So they knew somebody was out there that had killed like multiple people. And because it was each in a different province in the 1800s, like it's impossible to tie together. It was really hard for them.
Well, yeah, because communication was just so much like slower and stuff.
Yeah.
I could see that for sure. Just like not aware of what's going on at places that aren't right in your purview. Mm-hmm.
Police believe that they now had the perpetrator of multiple of these murders, but they didn't have any proof to link him other than a couple of the sources saying that they had released a perpetrator description from one of the murders of the boy Portillier. They somehow had a perpetrator description, like, from his family members and witnesses or something, that saw a guy in the field near him right before he was killed. So they had that guy's description, so they were kind of trying to match him to that, so at least they could pin this one murder on him.
Sure, and know who to, like, be on the lookout for, maybe.
Yeah, so they have him in custody, so with more questioning about that specific case and investigators going back and re-talking to witnesses, he ended up finally confessing to committing all of those 11 murders. He ended up saying to them, quote, "I committed them all in moments of frenzy."
Okay. Well, you obviously enjoyed it.
Right? He kept doing it.
So
Joseph Bosher, he ended up earning the multiple nicknames. He's been nicknamed the French Ripper, the Southeast Ripper, as his killings happened just a few years after the infamous Jack the Ripper killings in London in 1888.
Wow, but he's so much lesser known.
Yeah. In the little thing I read about him, and I wanted to include it, he is known as the Killer of Little Shepherds. And there was also a book entitled The Killer of Little Shepherds, which was one of my best sources, was like an article interview kind of thing they did with the author of that book. He spent like 4 years researching it and reading through all like the police report and the case files. And he ended up going to each of the provinces where one of the kids was killed and like talked to their family members and like what they heard about, like what had been passed down through the family about what happened.
Yeah, that's really cool to hear.
Yeah. I think it'd be pretty
good source. Yeah.
Yeah, it'd be pretty interesting, I think, to read the book. But news of his case had traveled as far as the United States, where even the New York Times declared that his crimes, quote, surpassed in number and atrocity of those of the Whitechapel murderer. So,
dang.
Like, from the New York Times, they thought he was worse than Jack the Ripper, which is pretty crazy.
Technically, I would say he killed more. Didn't Jack the Ripper only get pinned for, like, 5, like, confirmed?
Yeah.
Murders,
something like that.
Yeah, because as notorious as he is, it wasn't the amount of people killed. I mean, it was a lot back then. No. I'm guessing,
but yeah, this, it was like, I didn't want to go into like the details, but like the disemboweling and like the mutilations were very hardcore for,
oh god. I mean, I'm glad.
Yeah, it was,
I
don't like
need all the details all the time, I guess.
Yeah, right.
It's pretty,
it was
gross.
A lot.
Yeah, it's like when people start talking about Igor, and I'm like, nope, that's fine. I don't. Do I need to know? I can read it, but do I need to see it?
Yeah. No. After his arrest, he ended up trying to kind of build his insanity defense. He attempted to prove it in a variety of ways. He claimed that a rabid dog's bite that he received as a child had poisoned his blood and caused this crazy madness within him.
Okay.
When that didn't seem to work, he then claimed that the quack cure that he took for the dog's bite was the cause. So,
oh,
it didn't,
Lord,
cure me. Yeah, the dog's bite drove me insane. And then if that didn't work, it was like, well, the cure I took for the dog's bite didn't work for the dog's bite, and it made me insane.
I was Cujo'd. Oh, wait. Nope, it was the medicine.
Yeah, it was the Cujo's medicine. Another claim, which seemed to be the next one. Hi, Gordo. Interrupted by cat.
Oh. It's such a big one, too. He's just like, what is this device I need to figure out?
Yeah.
Why you're on it.
So the next claim was like kind of part of his arrogant, egotistical stuff. I mentioned he was trying to say that he was sent by God and compared himself to Joan of Arc and said he was like on a path and all this stuff.
Yeah. God speaking to him, and then he's going to be a martyr, and oh, great.
Yeah. Despite his best efforts, he was declared sane by a field of doctors, and this was done after lengthy investigations by these doctors. I think it said about interviewing for like 5 months. Like, these doctors investigated and interviewed for like 5 months before they declared him sane.
Okay.
Yeah,
they maybe try to do their due diligence, I guess.
Yeah. That's one of the things that I kind of want to read the book that the guy researched, because the doctors are part of what makes this case so fascinating, because these doctors were just removing his toy from the room.
It's got some bells on it or something.
Yeah. These doctors, specifically one named Alexander Lacassange, he was credited
yes, you had a picture as of him.
Yeah, as being one of the founding fathers of modern criminology.
What?
And he believed that environment and inclination formed criminals, while others at the time mostly believed that it was solely a function of biology.
All nature versus nurture. Okay. He's got some incredible mustachios.
Yes. Very Arthur Conan Doyle. His team was also some of the first to make to figure out even how to make casts of footprints in like soil. They were some of the first to analyze blood spatter patterns, including looking where you wouldn't expect to look, like underneath tables and chairs and stuff for evidence, not just looking at the top.
That's good. I mean, that did help us for a while, although it's some of it's been a little bit, you know, discredited or whatever you want to call it. Yeah.
They also used bone and tooth measurements to get victims' age, which they weren't like super doing at the time. Okay. he himself also created an autopsy procedure, different ones that were like published. And he also published articles about how to match bullets fired to their guns. That was like basically the beginning of ballistics. So he he figured out that they had markings on them, and then what he did is he took like 26 I think it was, of the most popular guns, and he fired them, and then was like, here's what it was. So, and he but it was one step further. It wasn't just matching the kind of bullet to a style of gun, it was matching it specifically to that gun. And he figured it out because he noticed that one of the bullets from one of the crimes had like a lot of distinct grooves on it. So he took the gun that they knew that fired the shot, and he ended up getting like a cadaver, and he shot the cadaver a bunch of times and then removed the bullets and then noted that all of them had the exact same markings in the exact same spots on all the bullets.
So cool.
And that by using a different gun, even a different of that same caliber of gun, you would get different markings. So like, it was really specific for the time.
Yeah, that's really interesting and something I never really understood. Probably still don't quite understand all the way now, but like from doing different cases and stuff, that like rifles were called, I guess kind of part of the name is because like rifling indicates like grooves on the inside of the barrel of the gun, which obviously can transfer to like the bullet that goes through the barrel and stuff like that. Yeah, it's interesting. Yeah, yeah, it's like actual grooves, like you say.
So the book that was written, the Killer of Little Shepherds book, it focuses on the case, but it also talks a lot about the investigations and the like start of kind of this criminal investigation stuff that they were working. And they talk specifically about profiling, because he had talked about like how this killer would be like antisocial and all that kind of stuff, which is like, very John Douglas of you.
Yeah. pre-mindhunters, mindhunters.
For Lacassange, the case was a shining moment in a brilliant criminal justice career. The criminologist had already investigated the assassination of the French president Sadi Carnot in 1894. Jumping ahead, because I wanted to include this, in 1923, he petitioned for the creation of the International Police Commission, later called Interpol, which helped gather and share data on criminal activity for years to come. So he helped.
Ever heard of it? Yes, I have.
Right? He helped, like, fucking create Interpol.
That's interesting. I really like the stuff that has waves, you know, that affects the future and stuff.
He himself, though, was not without faults. It said some of the stuff he believed in was kind of written off as quack, like science of the time. He also believed in phrenology, the belief that the shape of one's skull shapes one's personality.
A bunch of people did for a while. It was pretty wild.
Yeah.
Poking about in your skull, and
so I mean, he's not
your knobs.
He's not perfect.
Sure. It was the 1800s. Who was
right? Always got to have something.
It was just barely get rid of slavery in some places.
So with all this, like, he ended up talking at Bache's like trial. And basically being like, this is our investigation we had. this is why we interviewed him. We believe he fits the profile. He fits like the sketch or like the witness statements. And they kept pressuring him and he ended up confessing. And then they deemed him fit for standing trial. He was tried for only one of the murders. And that was that boy that he matched the description of.
Okay.
Yeah, they thought it was okay because even if he was convicted of more of them, all it took was one victim and he would be sentenced to death. They really focused on the one that they knew they could get him for instead of trying to pin all the ones on him.
Yeah, which can sometimes backfire. Yeah.
Yeah. So he was found and convicted by the court in the county where he had murdered two of his victims, and he was sentenced to death on the 28th of October, 1898. One of the last sources I read said, well, in prison, he was left alone at some point with the warden, and Vache nearly beat him to death with a chair before the guards heard the warden's screams and came to stop him.
So, wow. Okay, guys.
Yeah. Like, fuck.
Maybe there should have been a guard outside the door, at least.
Right?
I don't know. Just a thought.
I only have a little bit more. He was executed by guillotine at dawn 2 months later on December 31st, 1898, at the age of 29.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
Wonder if his head blinked a couple times after it got cut off.
I don't know. It did say that he refused to walk to the guillotine under his own power and had to be dragged by the executioners.
All right. Well, way to go to your death like a man.
Right?
Or whatever.
Some stuff said he gave like this whole speech again about how like he was sent by God and all this stuff. And
yeah. Oh, really? Some crazy last words. Those are always fun.
Yeah, pretty much. The only other thing, which everything kind of mentions, but I didn't find much by way of evidence for it, was that many of the people believe his true victim count could be as high as 27. Yeah.
Some missing people unaccounted for.
Because there is, even, like I gave you the year breakdown of who was killed what year, but some of them were over... or like almost a full year apart, and like other years he killed like four people in a year, and sure, then like the next year it's only one. So yeah,
seems there... like, yeah, a bit too much of a cooling off period or whatever.
Yeah, and some of the cooling off, like I think two of the cooling off periods were more than 6 months apart. So they do kind of believe, because a couple of the victims were only a month, one of them was only a week apart. So, yeah, with how often he was traveling from province to province, they think it could be a lot more that were maybe just never tied together. So,
yeah, because otherwise it's like a weird pattern or a non-pattern.
Yeah. So, but I didn't find anything that talked about what any of those other victims, who they might be or anything.
Yeah, but could be more for sure. I could see it.
Yeah, I could too.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's the case. I ran across it and it said like, oh, this puzzling case, he's been called like the French Jack the Ripper, and it was the birth of modern criminology. And I was like, what? And like this listicle, and I was like, ooh, I gotta read this.
Oh, dang. Yeah, very similar time frame. And
yeah, I think the first murders were just 6 years after Jack the Ripper, so.
Yeah, or like a similar, like, vulnerable victims anyway, if not like sex workers and whatever, still people working by themselves and vulnerable and stuff, so.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Piece of shit.
Yeah, right? Ugh.
At least we caught this one.
Yeah.
I guess.
Yeah. Thankfully that lady's like family came to her rescue and they overpowered him and stuff.
Right.
Otherwise, who knows what might have happened.
Totally. Oh, good one. Never heard, like, I don't remember really hearing about it. I don't know. So,
okay.
Very, very cool.
It was pretty popular when I looked it up. So I was like, she might have heard of this one.
I mean, it's totally possible, of course.
Yeah.
Heard it and forgot it, maybe. So.
Sometimes it'll be like the last 10 minutes of a podcast episode. And I'm like, wait, I do know this one.
Oh, yes. The realization hits you. Where,
yeah.
Like, this isn't the case where, like, that this happens. It's like, no. Oh, okay, but it's this one. Yeah, sometimes you do know in the end. But it's hard to remember names and stuff, right?
Cause yeah.
You're just more like, yeah, literally, is this the one where this happens or whatever?
Yeah. Sometimes. Well, I find that happens to me, especially if I'm listen to more than one episode back to back. They all bleed together and then I don't remember details of any of them.
That is very true. Try listening to someone for like 8 hours straight where you just like listen to the one podcast.
I couldn't do that.
That
I couldn't do like, that.
What did I just hear? Yeah. You probably miss a lot because you just end up. I couldn't talk to one friend for 8 hours in a day. Like, I've just been like, okay, I need to talk to someone else at this party, right? Like, you just can't do it.
Yeah.
As interesting as they might be.
Well, all right. We will take a break and come back for part two.
I'll be right back. Got a case of the Gordos.
Oh, yeah.
He missed you.
Oh, he did. I feel like anytime I was trying to type my notes, when I sat down on the couch, he's like, oh, coach, I'm going to climb on top of you, and then you can't touch your keyboard.
And I can move my webpage and cover up his little face, but I don't want to because he's cute.
Hi.
The G-Man. What was it? El Gordo, the fat man.
Yeah.
That guy.
El Gordo.
All right. We are back. And I'm going to tell you all, especially you, Kelsey, and you, Gordo, about what's been called the greatest prank in history.
What? The greatest prank in history?
I'm going to talk about Jim and Dwight from The Office. No. But perhaps their ancestors.
Oh my God.
Okay, to be fair, this one might be reaching a little bit for a specific crime, but it's a really good story. They would certainly be charged with something today if this happened, I'm sure.
Okay, that's fine.
A misdemeanor, at least. I mean... but maybe nobody dies, you know, that's fine.
Yeah, all I can think of is that crimes and wine and crime episode where they did those kids selling chocolate bars or something.
That sounds familiar. And they
like their first episode. Yeah. The kids chocolate bar union.
Like, fuck this shit. Yeah. The people revolt.
Yeah,
this one's a little bit lighthearted, we'll say.
Perfect.
Yay, I'm excited, if you can't tell. It's sometimes also called the Burner Street Hoax. So.
All right. I haven't heard of either of those. So.
I think I first heard about this on... Yeah, I should probably give a shout out to... one of the podcasts I listened to and I've heard about it on was the Spill the Mead, which they tout themselves as a history gossip podcast, kind of. And they did have a lot of really good information on it. So shout out to Spill the Mead. We're about to spill the tea. Okay, this one was in 1809, so also 1800s. 1809, 1810, something say. The details.
Yeah, that's almost 100 years older than mine. That's crazy.
Oh, that's true. Like, yeah, it was late 1800s. Yeah, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah,
the times were even older.
Yeah. So that we do know what happened in November. It was a bet between two friends that basically alleged that the one friend could make any house in London that he chose the talk of the town for one day.
Okay.
Yeah. This is very specific, right?
Such a weird bet, but all right.
Well, I will give you, I do have some information on their backgrounds, which will give you maybe some context as to what these guys were like.
Oh, okay. But
basically, at 54 Berner Street, Westminster, London, on a November day in 18... See, now I have 1810. Because depending on the source. But either way, everything started out normally that morning. The maid was going about her business when a knock sounded very early at the door, about 5 a.m. And not expecting anyone, they went to the door a little confused. There stood a chimney sweep, wondering when he could start cleaning the chimney as requested. Flummoxed, the lady says, "Well, you must be mistaken. We have no need of your services. I'm so sorry, but there's been some mistake." But the poor man was obviously like, "Well, I need to get paid. This is a job I was asked to do." So he argued with her a little bit before she was able to get him to leave. Yeah, so she breathed a sigh of relief. No sooner had she sat down, however, than another knock sounded at the door. Another knock, knock, knock. "Here to sweep your chimney. Hello?"
Jesus.
And then again, knock, knock, knock. "Chimney sweep. Knock, knock, knock." 12 more times in the next few minutes this would happen.
It's like fake ordering pizza to a house, or I guess not fake, but ordering pizza to somebody else's house.
See, I've heard of this modern version too, right? Like, I don't know if it's something that happens a lot or just something I heard about that happened. Like, one guy kept doing it to another person for a time, and you're like, okay, but what if he likes pizza? I mean, obviously it's an inconvenience.
Who's paying for the pizza?
Right.
It's on the other guy's tab. Take it.
The pizza guy's going to get held hostage, like on, that was on The Office, because Michael was like, "I can't use this coupon for all these pizzas." And he just like keeps the kid there for a while. it was a lot. So the poor maid servant was like, "Hopefully that was just a little bit of confusion for the day."
Yeah.
This is going to happen. This reminds me of a quote that I heard in Outlander. "Sufficient unto the day is the evil thereof." I don't know. I think it's from the Bible. too many unpleasant things in one day for one person.
Yeah.
Minutes later, another knock comes at the door. Knock, 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 knock. I thought about doing that every time, like she did on Spill the Mead, where she was like, "Knock, knock, knock, chimney sweep, knock, knock, knock." I was like, my dog will go crazy.
Oh, yeah.
I can't do it. But, like, can you just imagine just the incessant, like...
It would be annoying.
Oh, totally. Next up, it was a coal cart person. So, like, carts full of coal for your fires. But it wasn't just one. It was, like, a whole fleet of them. So, probably, like, another dozen or whatever.
And on the first day of Christmas, but you're about to
be... Totally. Like... Also made me think of that episode of The Office where Andy gets Erin all of the gifts from that song. And she's like, "Can someone who's sending them to me just please stop?" It's like the goose is already like almost pecked out her eye and everything.
Yeah.
Yes, so presumably the 12 chimney sweeps were off in search of Mary Poppins, and at least they were dealt with. But then they had the coal cart people, and then, just more people start coming up. And, like, the owner of the house was a wealthy widow named Mrs. Tottenham, and she was just a hole up in her room, I don't know, maybe just watching the proceedings, I'm not too sure, but. She's like, "What the hell?" Now the street became congested with bootmakers, shoemakers, haberdashers, hatmakers, all sorts of tradespeople. And across the street, two men gazing on from their rented room, looking at the proceedings, and one hands over a single gold coin, the whole impetus for the bet.
Oh my god.
Between these two men.
Yes.
So, who were these two men?
And why? How did this make the house the talk of the town? Just, like, makes everybody mad?
I mean, yeah. Like, that gives you a taste of it, but, like, yeah, it becomes, like, a circus, basically.
Wild.
All planned by these two men, one Samuel Beasley and one Theodore Edward Hook.
They have two crazy names.
Beasley made me laugh because I was like, literally, like Pam Beasley. The Office. Anyway. Yes, Sam Beasley, we know a little bit about him. He was born in 1786-ish, I wrote. Can't remember why. Maybe it was disputed. But later he joins the army. He happens to get knocked unconscious at one point during the war. The Peninsula War, I guess it was. I don't know. I was like, what war? So many. And he was like so knocked out and lifeless looking that they prepared him for burial. They were like, he's dead.
They didn't even poke him with a stick.
Right. I'm not sure how they're testing it at this time. Like, are you taking a pulse or what? But then he just makes this miraculous recovery, like just basically sitting up like,
oh. Yeah.
I'm alive. Get me out of this body bag. So he also in his past went on a rescue mission to save. She was this duchess with this very French sounding name that I apparently abbreviated to Duchess D.A. So I guess I might put it back in there later. Damn, and you conquered all your stupid French names too.
Oh, I only looked how to pronounce one of them and the rest I won it.
I won it. Nice. Okay, but this Duchess, she was captured by French forces led by Napoleon.
Oh, no.
Okay, so her full, I guess her name was Marie-Thérèse Charlotte de France, and she was one of the daughters of Louis the 16th and Marie Antoinette, so pretty pedigreed.
Yeah.
And she, it said one of the only to escape the French Revolution with their head intact. A teen at the time, she was first sentenced to death, but later it was commuted to life in exile. She was the eldest child to the couple, sister to brother Louise, and sister to the unfortunately short-lived Princess Sophie of France. And also, fun fact, she was known as the amazing name of Madame Royale.
Ooh. Yes, please.
Casino Royale? Madame Royale. Anyway, that's who he was rescuing. I just thought that was kind of cool. Duchess of Angoulême. That's what the full name was. Very Frenchy French. Sorry. I had details that we probably don't need because, you know, I just like to go off on side tangents about people. it's just not the focus of the story. But after Beasley was done completing these adventures of his, he returned to England where he wrote a couple of novels and over 100 plays.
Wow.
Okay. Yeah, he was also an amazing architect and he designed many theaters in London, which I probably could have looked up the ones and put some pictures on for you, but I'm sorry, I didn't. I'll try to add some for social media.
Yeah.
I don't think it was like anything super insane, like, you know, some architects are like, woo, way out there.
Yeah.
But yeah, it's just a fun fact. And also he was like apparently a really great public speaker and could improvise on the spot. So his like dad would be like, look at him go, give him a topic. He can just like spit rhymes on anything. I don't know. I was like, okay, I guess he's a master debater.
Yeah, sounds like he did everything.
Yeah, this Beasley guy. He and his father scored a dramatic success called The Soldier's Return. And by scored, I mean like they did the musical score. They like literally.
Oh, spoiled. Okay. Yeah. What?
So he's like a composer. I don't know if he's like their Times Eminem or what. He's got this musical thing going on. He wrote several more popular works and got enough attention from the ladies to be called a playboy. And the prince at that time, who would later become King George IV, loved him so much he personally gave him a job. A rather random job, I call it. Because he made... this is... I said this was Theodore now we're talking about, right?
No.
Damn it! Theodore, he's the great public speaker. He's the Eminem of the time.
Oh, okay.
Not Beasley. Now we're on to Theodore. I'm so sorry. I don't know why I skipped over his name there. He made Theo the accountant general and treasurer of the island of Mauritius, apparently. He would earn £2,000 per year for this position, rather. He's just like totally in charge of this island's finances.
Sure, but, he seems like he knows how to do that.
Yeah, he's totally qualified.
Yeah.
Which is why he bungles it very badly, managing to lose £12,000. I'm not sure if it's in the first year or whatever, but he's just not able to account for it at all.
Damn.
And when they ask him,
more than he got paid. So.
Yeah. He's like, I didn't really keep any accounts. Like, what do you mean, accounts? So,
what do you mean, finances, money, goods and services?
Like my job that I was supposed to be doing?
Yeah, what do you mean?
So he did do some minor jail time for this. But then he like started a newspaper or something in jail and found he enjoyed that. He's wow. Failing upwards, as it were.
Yeah. Oh my god.
He uses some of these skills to make some more money eventually, but then gets sent back to basically a halfway house for racking up, quote, debts to the state. So it's like almost like a debtor's prison that he ended up back in.
You embezzled money.
I know. What? Just pay your taxes, bro. He gets sent to something called a sponging house, which apparently is a house usually maintained by a bailiff for keeping debtors for a day to afford opportunity to come to terms with their creditors. Or sponging house from the extortionate charges made there for food and lodging. Nothing could I find about actual sponges. Yes.
I was like, is this a bathhouse? Is this a sponge bathhouse?
But the second... like the etymology definition with the extortionate charges, it's like, okay, like you're the sponge and they're draining you of all your resources, I guess. Maybe because I've had partners that when they get mad at me have been known to call me a sponge just because I don't make as much money as them. Anyway, it's fine. But like Theo is definitely the Jim Halpert of the pair. Which I say, because even though the other guy's a Beasley, this was not his, the Burner Street hoax was not his first rodeo or prank. He had already done something that they call the postcard prank, I guess.
What?
Yes, which was so called apparently because it was basically the first postcard ever. I don't know how else to explain this, but he drew a cartoon on a single stiff piece of paper and sends it to himself because it was a cartoon about postal workers and he wanted them to have to see the postcard and handle it because he mailed it to himself so they would have to look at it. And I'm like, so this is like the first thing that's not in like a sealed letter and it's what becomes
first like card chain email or meme.
Yes, the precursor, exactly.
And just all your co-workers. Yeah
the first the first trolling. So yeah, it should probably come as no shock that he's the one that makes a bet with his buddy Beasley that for one single guinea, which is a gold coin worth £1, 1 shilling, so like not a lot, that he can make any house he chose into the talk of London in just 1 week.
Wow.
Yep. And Beasley was like, sure, show me. And
For all of that, how much did he pay? Or I guess nobody got paid. None of those people got paid. That sucks for them. They all thought they were gonna get paid that day.
It was basically a big red letter writing campaign he had to do. Nowadays I wonder if there would be more financial repercussions.
It's basically like swatting somebody's house. Like,
yeah. Or is it, what do you mean, like a SWAT team?
Yeah, when people like call unnecessarily and they're like wasting
that's
their resources. Trolling. Yeah, I'm sure like if it happened now, all the unions could be like, you wasted our time. You called like 12 of our workers.
Yeah, exactly. Like on a small scale, I think stuff like this can happen where like, I don't know, I heard about one on one podcast where someone ordered something through delivery, like a present, like I don't know if it was DoorDash or whatever, but it was, they basically like picked up a candle or something for them instead of like food. It was for a gift. And then like the person said they delivered it, but then didn't deliver it. They just kept it. So there was like nothing the person that ordered it could basically do because.
Oh, shoot.
Yeah. I was like, what the fuck? Like, what is wrong with people? They will find a way to scam, you know?
Yeah.
Yeah. So. Take your pick. This either happened when they were walking down the street and they decided to look at the house and go, that's the house. Or else it maybe happened when they were drinking at a pub and they decided to come up with this idea.
Jeez.
Probably betting on the second one.
Yeah.
And nobody really knows whether he had any reason to pick that particular house. Maybe he knew it was inhabited by a wealthy widow, but maybe he was just like, eh, looks fancy. Yeah, a lot of things. I had a quote that was like about her name. Almost all accounts I've read state that she was either just a Mrs. T or Mrs. Tottenham. It said, I can now reveal that she was in fact Mrs. Mary Teresa Tottenham, a widow at the time the hoax is believed to have occurred. But as to why such a hoax was instigated, I have no idea. Nor do I know how Mary Teresa would have felt about such a prank or whether she even knew of it until she read it in the newspapers, as she would no doubt have had servants to receive guests and tradespeople.
Yeah. Oh, that maid. Oh.
Yes, the one having to like go to the door
every probably like minute now.
Yeah, and that's kind of their background. So yeah, it just basically all started that one late November morning. Oh, is this where I have the date here? 28th or 29th? See, nobody can decide. Apparently there wasn't good records at this time.
Yeah.
But, like, yeah, it starts with the chimney sweep, and then the maid rebuffs him, and then it's, like, knock, 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 more chimney sweeps, and then the coal carts, and then among all the bakers and stuff, there was people bringing, like, wedding cakes and things that had been specifically ordered.
Oh, my God.
Everybody from wedding cake bakers to people that make the little miniature portraits in like the lockets and everything. Everybody. Like, oh my God, it's
like the entire like the entire town showed up on our doorstep in the morning.
Like all of London. Like everybody else is like, I can't get anyone to come anywhere to give me coal this morning.
Yeah, they're all at this lady's house. Everybody, the whole city shut down because everybody's trying to get to her house. Damn.
And then come along a throng of prospective maids, cooks, and other servants that were responding to the job listings that they had received. And if that wasn't enough, then came amidst that a ton of furniture deliveries. Dropping off furniture.
I'd be like, come on in, furnish my house.
Yeah, exactly. Is it paid for? Yeah. Yeah, because you don't know how that stuff works nowadays, so you don't get stuff dropped off until it's paid for. Maybe this is why.
Yeah. I'd be like, whoever's paying for it, I'd give me all the baked goods, everything. Give me everything that's paid for.
Is that a cake? Yes, this is the right house.
Shoes. Give me shoes.
But then came a hearse that was trying to pick up the dead body they'd been told was waiting inside the house.
Jesus. Okay.
So it's not all great.
No, that sucks.
And then apparently like a second wave, they said, of deliveries were dropped off. And it included things like pianos, like baby grand pianos and organs. And they're all like clogging up the road.
Jesus.
So yeah, this is when it becomes a nightmare. The road is choked with the horses, the carts, the people trying to get in and out, and a growing crowd of onlookers.
as you would have.
Yeah. Sam and Theo were snickering in their rented room across the street, enjoying the show. Then it hits noon. Yeah, yeah. You think you had some long mornings getting up at 5:30. No, I'm just kidding.
Yeah. This has been going on for 7 hours already.
This is their long day at Disney. Yeah.
Yeah.
Now the Lord Mayor of London arrives in response to a very personal letter addressed to him, purportedly by the dying widow that was in residence. She was not dying, spoiler alert.
If she knew what was going on, maybe she'd have a heart attack.
Yeah, what is she doing? Just sitting upstairs? I gotta wonder. There's no information on
like
how she handled this.
Surely she could hear, they wouldn't have doorbells then, so like people knocking on the door?
I think it's all knocks, yeah, I think so.
Jeez.
knock, knock, knock. Yeah, how big is this house? She's trying to sleep, she's like, what the fuck? So following the mayor, the governor of the Bank of England and the governor of the East India Trading Company stop by.
Sure, why not?
And then Gordo's butt.
Yeah, Gordo's butt stopped by.
Oh, and get this. Followed by the Duke of, is it Gloucester? Gloucester? Whatever that fucking... Gloucester? I don't know. I can't with these English names. And the actual frigging grand old Duke of York. No word on his 10,000 men. Marched right up at the top. They'll march back down again. I don't know. That was all capped off by the arrival of the Lord Chief Justice, the Commander-in-Chief of the British Army, a Cabinet Minister, and the Archduke of Canterbury as well.
This guy was so creative. I have to say, this is like next level. Very convincing. Level.
Yeah, for all these people to be like, I'm needed here.
All these important people just to visit one random rich person. Like, right? Fuck.
This is way before, what's the new, like, there's a podcast out called Scamanda or something about some real scammer. Like, we're used to this stuff nowadays. I don't know.
Yeah.
Quite amazingly, there was no, like, riots that broke out. No looting.
Okay.
Really. No fights.
Apparently that's good.
Other than a couple of carts got overturned and some people helped themselves to some of the casks of ale that were being delivered. So I guess there was some leaked booze. But finally, by 2 to 3 p.m.-ish, the police had gotten control of the situation and were able to cordon off the street itself to help evacuate the area.
Jesus.
It took a while.
Oh my God.
That's and somehow, crazy. Like, yeah. And then the culprits were not, like, officially charged or caught after the incident. I don't know. You might be surprised to learn that I'm sure they looked for them, but they weren't able to track them down. Gordo.
Yeah.
Yeah, so it's crazy how, like, nobody knew really what happened or who did this until one of them wrote a semi-autobiographical, whatever.
Sounds right.
I wrote semi-autographical, and it's not underlined in red somehow. Oh. he wrote a book about himself in 1836, sorry, that was essentially, like, admitting to the prank.
Oh my god.
Yeah. Fuck, which one was it? God damn it. I don't know. Wait, maybe I have it later. Who wrote the book? I'm sorry. And they figured out somehow that he had had the help of, like, two or more people in penning the... They figure about 1,000 to 4,000 letters he probably had to write to get this accomplished.
Jeez.
And from what they figure, he had a friend named Henry Higgins and an legend unknown actress that helped to write some of these letters.
Ooh.
Yeah, who was it? Yeah, sorry, I was trying to understand what I wrote here in the notes. Just, like, I just had that some of the sources kind of differ. Different date, slightly different address sometimes. I'm not sure why it's not, you know, like, just, it happened. It's in the paper. It should be like, this. You made this the most well-known house, you know, for the day. Yet, like, none of the papers can seem to agree on the exact date or whatever.
Right?
Yeah. It's a little annoying. I had that according to one source, this went down on a Bedford Street near Covent Garden in London. Okay, so this is maybe like a version that they think it could have been. It said it could have been at the home of a Mr. Griffiths, this one source was saying. And then I had a quote, they demanded to see Mr. Griffiths, who it transpired was out of town, leaving the servants to eventually lock and bolt the doors. His deliveries included a mangle, sofas, boots, tea and coffee, fiddles and flutes, pianofortes, prints and drawings, coal wagons and gigs, to name but a few. Physicians, surgeons, dentists, and Piddock of the Exeter Exchange Menagerie was required to purchase a live tiger. Oh my god, it's the original joke, Sonic. The most annoyed person, however, was an elderly man who had hobbled to town from Hammersmith to be paid a legacy of £700, which he was assured Mr. Griffiths had received for him. So, like, whether this is a similar case or maybe...
Maybe it was know. Inspired?
Yeah, like, an inspired by room. It was confusing to me. Weird. I honestly, yeah. It's something I maybe could look into more, yeah, to be honest, because it's just... Oh, yeah, because then something else also said there was a similar incident that was found to be reported in Edinburgh, Scotland. So I was like, okay... Of course, Scotland, you get my attention. No. But this one article said a singular hoax was practiced on Tuesday at Edinburgh. Cards were put into the post office addressed to medical gentlemen, undertakers, upholsterers, grocers, confectioners, haberdashers, milliners, mantua makers? I'm sorry, wig makers, etc. Whatever that means. Desiring their attendance at a gentleman's house a few miles from Edinburgh and requesting them to send a hearse and mourning coaches for a funeral, and others to send out quantities of wine. Hello. grocery articles, etc.
Is this for a while people didn't make house calls? Deliveries? Because they're just like, we've been fucked over too many times. No more deliveries or house calls.
Yeah, too easy to pretend you're like writing a letter from someone's house that you want some service performed, I guess.
Yeah.
But like, I don't know if these other ones are true. It sounds like it happened multiple times, you know?
Weird.
This one said, in consequence of this, the road was crowded with carriages, coaches, a hearse, and 12 mourning coaches. Like, mourning, like, you know, grieving. Yeah. I'm not sure what a mourning coach is exactly in comparison to a hearse, but whatever. After their arrival at the house, to their utter astonishment, they found the whole thing to be a hoax of some silly, malicious wag.
A wag.
Oh, oh, and I probably included this one because another one took place in London, according to the Evening Mail, on the 14th of March, 1810. My favorite date. No.
Yeah.
Hoax. Physicians, surgeons, and apothecaries, jewelers, auctioneers, and governesses, poulterers, pastry cooks, and undertakers, etc., have for the last 4 days besieged the house of Mr. Hookham, 15 Old Bond Street, in consequence of 2-penny and 3-penny post letters containing appointments, order, etc.
Oh my god, I didn't think about how much he spent on postage.
Postage!
Just to mail all those letters, like 4,000 letters?
Yes! The guy from the inventor of the fucking postcard.
Yeah.
But wait, there's more, and this one... I forgot about this. From the Suffolk Chronicle, another significant date, the 19th of January, 1811. Both the birthdays. Yeah. Reported the following hoax, which they believe to have been instigated by the same prankster as the Berners Street hoax. On Sunday, tonight, every confectioner in the metropolis, from Whitechapel to Hyde Park, including the adjacent... Ooh. That sounds like Jack the Ripper territory.
It is Whitechapel.
Right?
Yeah.
Including the adjacent streets, to the amount of near 100, sent 12 cakes of various dimensions, none less than 20 pounds weight, to Mr. E.I. Samuel, West India merchant, Great Prescott Street, Goodman's Fields. Circular letters having been sent to the different shops with the orders, stating that Mr. S was recommended by the eminent city baronet. That was a whole fucking sentence.
So many words.
I was like, wait, you're not done yet. The whole of the gentleman's friends were invited, most of whom did themselves the honor to accept the invitation, to the no small amusement of the authors, who it is suspected attended as if invited.
Oh, God. Okay.
So this one was just like a fake party, maybe?
Sure. I'm
understanding that right? Clearly I don't. On Tuesday, circular letters were also sent to about 100 grocers, in consequent of which, from 9 a.m. till 9 p.m., the neighborhood was amused with arrivals of parcels of tea and sugar, about 30 pounds in weight each, and on Wednesday arrived, by the same plan, about 100 fine large Cheshire cheeses, which cut a curious appearance from their uniformity, and sometimes 8 or 10 meetings at the door at one time.
Can you imagine?
The people coming to your house with the cheeses. I don't know. Yeah, it was insane, but that's like, that's where I cut myself off.
I can't believe that happened so many times.
I forgot, I almost forgot when I was, that I had more in the notes about, yeah, the other instances. I'm like, oh yeah, and then like, maybe that's, it happened again.
Crazy. That's so wild. Like, I hope it was all paid for by the people doing it. Otherwise, that's such a waste of, like, food and everything. But it's still funny.
It's not, like, completely victimless. Yeah, obviously people were, like, put out and annoyed and, like, sent on jobs that they didn't get paid for. But it's all still fairly innocent in the realm of true crime.
Yes. Yeah, nobody got killed.
Right.
Yeah, wow. That's ridiculous.
A few people got some free ale out of it, or yeah, you know, whatever. And who knows what happened to all those large Cheshire cheeses? I want to know.
Yeah.
That did and you all order those, a cheese? I don't know. How much is cakes. It?
All oh those God. Cakes and everything.
Oh, can you imagine? Yeah, the time you put in making a wedding cake and then to be like, no, we don't need it. Yeah.
But like if you roll up on a house and you see a long line of like deliveries and you're like, there's six other wedding cakes and 12 things of cheese and a funeral exactly. casket. Like, what is going on?
You're not... Hopefully everyone could just kind of like write it off as a, yeah. It drives yeah. whatever foible.
Yeah, but... I'd be a little suspicious if I was delivering to a place like a wedding cake and there was like three other wedding cakes. You'd be like, what's happening?
Exactly. But yeah, it's so weird. It's think about how long it takes to like, you know, receive a missive by mail or whatever, and then you have to like,
yeah,
you're like, oh, well, now I have to complete it. I'm not gonna like write them back and be like, are you sure?
Yeah, and the fact that they had to specifically order everything, like you had to like tell them details of stuff, and
right, you're like, you wouldn't think somebody would prank that because you're like, who would take the time to write out this if they didn't really want it? You're like, well, this asshole.
Yeah, wow, that's so crazy.
Oh, I'm glad you liked it.
Yeah, so weird.
Well, before we sign off here, a couple things I meant to tell you, I don't know, last time we recorded, whenever the hell that was.
Forever ago.
Yeah, Mom and Ressa got back from their trip, and did I tell you they gave me I got a little magnet that was from the Gardner Museum.
No, you didn't tell me that. That's cute.
Yeah. Mom was like, yeah, my mom bought it, I think. And she was like, oh, I just thought it looked cute. And then she's like, and then I realized it was one of the stolen paintings from the case. And I was like, oh, cool.
That's really you cool. heard it here. Alana has one of the paintings.
That's right.
Alana has stolen property in her possession.
On micro scale. But also, yes, I think we talked about last time, our newest Patreon shout out. But
yeah,
I forgot. I wanted to do a shout out in a way that I heard someone say before. So ask me to shout out Patrick, our new Patreon.
Yeah.
So let me say, shout out to our Patreon, Patrick!
Patrick!
Yeah, I heard it on something where they were like, shout out to, and then they like just shouted it out. Anyway, but that would bring us to, we get to pick, or rather Pat got to pick a topic because he joined at our special level on Patreon where you get to pick one. Yes. And that's exciting because then we get to pick that for like our next episode. Yeah. So that's the next one, right? Yes.
Yeah, we have our January Patreon episode that we're going to be recording and releasing.
Shortly.
A movie review and recap thingy, if you guys like those ones.
Yes, a very, I've found a very controversial movie that people are already talking about on other podcasts and stuff. So, yeah.
We needed to jump on the Saltburn bandwagon.
Yeah. I ended up telling Pat about how it ended because he went upstairs. He was like, I don't know what's happening, but it's taking a while and I'm going to go have my bath. And I was like, okay.
Yeah, it's a slow burn kind of thing.
It was. That's what I said. It was a bit of a slow burn. Should have called it slow burn. Anyway, Yeah, we'll get into some of the more memorable scenes in that one.
Yeah.
But yeah, that should be fun. And then I'm really excited for what Pat picked for his Patreon themed episode, because it's gonna be a little satanic panic.
Yeah.
So yeah, I think that should be fun, as in interesting, just like something that gets mentioned but you don't like always do a deep dive into it. So
yeah
I've already had some fun looking into it a little bit, but yeah, I'm excited we're back, and we'll catch you next week.
Mm-hmm.
Keep it cryptic.
Bye.
Well, all our longtime listeners will definitely know that recording a podcast is not always easy.
No.
Nope. So you better believe, like, when we find something we like, that we're going to probably stick to it and not look for anything else. So yeah, that's one of the reasons why I love Zencastr. When we tried it, we were like, okay, finally, I wanted to have the video, and it's what, up to 4K video, which is pretty effing cool. I can see every pore on Kelsey. No, I'm just kidding.
I hope not.
But it's great video, and like just really easy on this one. So like once we stopped recording on our phones, I was like, yeah, this is the one for us. So even though sometimes our computers fuck up, it always comes through for us in the end, because we've never lost like a recording, knock on wood, and every time we've had to use it, it's just been really great and really easy, and everything's just recorded when we wanted it to, which is, you know, it's a lot to ask for when you podcast as much as we do.
Yeah, it's nice that each of us has our own separate audio recording that you can download and edit, so it makes when one of us doing something or has something, it's easy. You can edit that out even with the other person was talking, because you have two separate tracks that you can edit. Yeah, it's one of the reasons we love Zencastr. Definitely, it makes it a lot easier. And the audio quality is also a lot better than any of the other programs we tried using in the past.
Yes, it is the best. So go to zencastr.com/pricing and use my code cryptic, and you'll get 30% off your first month of any Zencastr paid plan.
We want you to have the same easy experience as we do for all our podcasting and content needs. It's time to share your story.
Keep it cryptic. Thank you for listening to Castles and Cryptids. We love all our listeners and appreciate every subscriber, every new review, every listen, rate, and download. Our music is by Kobe Off Air, and our cover art is by Antonio Garcia. We are also a proud member of Darkcast Network, where you can find the best and spookiest of all indie podcasts. Follow us on social media, where we are at Castles and Cryptids on mostly all of the things, now including TikTok. Check out our bonus content on Patreon, Cryptid Clashes, video minisodes of your hosts making asses of themselves, Ask Me Anything, quizzes, other special episodes, and more. Starting at just $2 a month, you can get 1 to 2 extra episodes, depending on your level. We produce, edit, and research everything ourselves, and any support you can lend helps us to keep it cryptic.